All right. So we're going to pick up, we're going to back up just a little bit. If you want to go back, we were looking at Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 5. And while you're turning over there, just as a reminder, we had looked at Proverbs 18. We're talking about the idea of listening. We've talked about the things that inhibit communication. What are some things that cause there not to be good communication in the family, specifically between the husband and the wife? Proverbs 18 talked about thinking about your response before you really listen to what has been said. Have you ever found yourself preparing your response while someone's still speaking to you? You've already decided what you're going to say. You're, at that point, you're no longer listening. You're crafting your own response. So in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 5, it says, "A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel." And then if we looked over in James chapter 1, verse 19, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." Are you slow to speak? You don't have to nod or shake your head. Just think about it. Are you slow to speak? So, do you listen to your spouse? Do you listen to your kids? Children, do you listen to your parents? Or are you already formulating in your mind? Communication involves the person who is communicating something, but it has to be received. Are we good receivers? We were at some point in our relationship, right? If we're husband and wife, there was a time where that communication flowed freely. Otherwise, you wouldn't be with them now. So there it was a point in time where you could communicate. So nothing makes Jennifer madder than she's talking to me and I'm not listening. The Aggies are on. Show some respect. Right? Or I'm talking to her and she's standing in the living room looking at whatever she looks at, all of the design, and you know, I can be talking to her, blank. She's thinking about something else. If we're talking especially about something important, are you in the conversation? Or are you just present? I can tell you, in my professional career, I have had to take listening classes. Classes on how to listen. Because we understand in a professional nature, it's very important to listen to your customer. You better understand what your customer is really saying before you try to respond. And so there are active listening classes that I have to take. And the other thing is, anybody have a guess about how much, what percentage of communication is non-verbal? Estimated between 80 and 90%. Now, that's very difficult in a pandemic when no one can actually get together in a professional environment, right? But again, there are classes on how do you read the room? How do you look around and see how people are responding to what's being said? I'm not saying we turn our spouse into a science project. But what I'm saying is we recognize the importance of those skills. They're important to communicate properly. Do we take the same time and care when we're talking to our spouse or our kids? I know I haven't always done that. It's not something either that you just learn. It's not like riding a bike. You don't just learn it and then it comes natural. You have to focus on it day after day, week after week, to try and make sure that you're practicing effective listening. Yesterday, I did not practice effective listening. The example I gave was real. So it's something we need to work on. The value of communication in marriage, I don't think you can overstate it. It is the foundation of your relationship. You have to be able to communicate with one another. You should be comfortable to share your innermost fears, concerns, worries, joys with each other. And the question is, can you do so without the fear of criticism? Are you going to be criticized for what you say? Many times when there is a problem with communication in the marriage, communication either completely stops or goes down to just a dribble. There's very little communication. Now, there may be discussion, but I'm saying there's very little communication. Is your spouse afraid to tell you something because they know everybody else is going to know it? We talked about that, right? They're not going to share things with you because they can't trust you to keep it between the two of you. And we talked about that's different from seeking counsel. There's nothing wrong with seeking wise counsel. There is a difference with telling everybody all of your business and your spouse just no longer shares that information. Try to communicate in a clear, respectful, and forthright way. And do not assume what your spouse is thinking. That is easier said than done. Okay, so we've talked about some things that inhibit communication, things that get in the way of effective communication in our family relationship. So let's look at some attitudes that promote good communication. The flip side. Look over in Colossians chapter 3. Starting in verse 12, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. Sure, we're all familiar with this verse. Let's think about this verse in application to our family relationships, because it applies. It definitely applies. So there's eight attitudes that are specified here. You have compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, forgiving each other, and love. And depending on which verse you're reading, in verse 14, what do these eight things, will they contribute to? What does the ESV say?
So this one says, above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony.
Anybody have New American Standard?
Unity.
Unity. The New King James says bond of perfection. The idea is unity. You will be one. For those of you who may be in various studies in John, what does Jesus constantly promote? He talks all the time about his unity with the Father and his apostles and followers being in unity with him. Are you in unity? Are you in unison with your spouse? Are you two on the same page? Are you practicing these eight attitudes when you deal with your spouse? Or are you able to practice those when you deal with one another, and when you go to work or when you're talking with your friends, you show these attitudes, but yet when you deal with your spouse or your parents or your children, do you have a different standard? Sometimes when we get familiar, we feel more comfortable letting loose, right? We don't focus so much on it. We can let it rip. We're more guarded when we're dealing with maybe with one another or with definitely in a professional environment or with your friends. But man, when it comes to spouse and kids, let me tell you how I feel. And I'm going to tell you how I want. Mark 3:25 says, a house divided itself cannot stand. If a husband and wife are not on the same page, that house cannot stand. Is communication easy? No one wants to answer. No, it's not. It's not easy. We don't just come up as a child and know how to effectively communicate. Does a child communicate effectively? A baby? A baby pretty much communicates effectively, right? Can we use those same communication skills as an adult? Do we sometimes? We scream until we get what we want. And here's the thing. You may have been married a long time, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But if you're not communicating effectively, as we talked about in our first lesson, you need to learn. The old phrase, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, doesn't apply. It's not an excuse. God doesn't accept that. If you can't communicate effectively, you need to start learning how now. Sometimes discussions go for hours. They may take a couple of days. Everybody communicates differently. Some husbands and wives don't go to bed until 4 a.m. if they have a disagreement. I know some couples that are better with a cooling off period. It's better to cool off and start the next day. It depends on what works for you. But you need to get on the same page with your spouse. It does take a lifetime, or at least I can tell you it's taken over 29 years, almost 30 for us. We still work on it. We still work on it. And most of the time it's not difficult, but there are those times when communication can become challenging. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Passage probably most of us could quote. And we're going to talk more about these individually as we move into our lesson on caring love between the husband and the wife. But let's just look at them now. Verse 4, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. I've known of people who will take those verses and they'll put that on the refrigerator. And if that's what it takes to keep that at the forefront of your mind, I think that's a good exercise. But when we're dealing with our spouse or with our family members, is this at the forefront of our minds? Are these the attitudes we're displaying? Are we displaying love? Because this is how God defines love. Is that the way we communicate with each other? Billy. Sure.
Just amplified in marriage. But when you were talking about what you want your life together to be like, and you have a goal together, you can make it happen through the Lord, because He gives us these tools of how to be better people, how to take care of other people, and it especially again is amplified in marriage if we will follow. kid how to bat. You said, just keep your eye on the ball. What you're telling them is if you have a goal in mind, your body will sort of do what it needs to do to make that thing happen. But a lot of times we don't have a goal to get, or we think it's too far gone. It's not, this issue is just not fixable. We just won't, we might as well just give up. But once we really believe, no, this is fixable through Jesus, and we can do this together, then, as you mentioned, since we all communicate a little bit differently, you'll figure out a way to make it work. But you have to both believe that it will work. You have to have faith that you can do it through Jesus. And then these things can get better. I guess that's what I'm, you know, as you've been talking this morning, that's what I think about is those times when it's been difficult and you start feeling a little bit hopeless, like, man, I don't know if this issue is going to work out. We may just have to act like, you know, and you do, you get to those patches where you kind of are, you both know there's a problem and you're just acting like it's not there at this point.
Right.
Which eventually comes back to bite you because it's going to come up again.
It's going to come up again. You're absolutely right. And I think what you're saying is absolutely true, because what we talked about at the beginning was both husband and wife have to have the foundation of Jesus Christ. Because if you don't have the same goal, you're not working off the same standards. And so when there is a disagreement, if both of you can get back to focusing on what the foundation is, I think it helps realign your goals, right? We talked about that triangle where husband and wife, the closer they get to God, the closer they get to each other. Yeah.
One thing we also need to remember is we're going to fail. We're going to fail miserably at the times, and we're going to be successful at the times. And as to Billy's point, those things are going to happen, and we need to be prepared for how to either recover from or get better at. And that's where the common goal comes into play really well.
No, you're right. Yeah. And so one thing I've mentioned before, every couple has to learn how to deal with those rough patches, right? I think I told you, Jennifer and I learned that when there's one person who's heated, the other person has to stay calm. And it's harder to practice than it sounds, but that has been an effective tool for us. If she's upset about something, I try to just stay calm, and vice versa. Doesn't work 100%, but I can tell you it's helped a lot. And Britt's right, you're going to fail at times, but you need to be prepared for when those breakdowns occur for how you're going to handle it. And even talk about how you're going to handle it. We've had discussions about how we argue and what is the most effective way when these things come up, how are we going to handle it? Because we both just can't be shouting at each other. That's not effective. And it's not instinctual either.
This is not a thing where you're just going to get along with this person. And there is no relationship where every day you wake up and look at each other and it's just like the first day. And that's not a thing. and so it is going to require forethought and a decided plan of action. Part of that, for instance, is, you know, you don't need to be talking about something you're upset about a lot of times at the time that you're upset about it. I mean, you need to come to some kind of resolution, you know, if it's nighttime or whatever and you're arguing, you gotta resolve it enough to be able to get to sleep or whatever. But I mean, you're going to have to plan out, okay, this is a thing, where, especially these major things. This is the thing we're going to have to deal with. Probably a good time to do it is, talk about it is when you're not upset about it.
That's true. And that's kind of what I was referring to. You can't come up with your game plan for how you're going to talk about issues you disagree with when you're in an issue you disagree with. It's something you should be talking about when communication is good and there aren't issues, because then you can make rational decisions and then have a plan when those things occur. Now, what are either personally or what you've heard, what are some of the reasons that people say they don't have good communication? Sean.
So I'm biased towards our stage in line. So this is not being harsh, but just a reality. One of the issues that's happening is that we're not having quality time with one another. So going back to a plan of action, we try to set aside, you know, either time with each other or time with the kiddos. Because when we're doing quality time, and it's communicating to everyone that we care about you, you're valuable, and so communication goes a lot better. But it is difficult sometimes in this stage, where one of the things that we hear and we've witnessed is that we're getting too busy, and I know sometimes out of our control, but we're not making the time. And that's one of the things.
And I will tell you, that is one thing we're going to talk about even more. About as we get into specifically the husband-wife relationship, is you've got twice the number of kids we had, but trying to find that time, just you and your spouse. Because yes, you can get caught up in a lot of things, and kids are important, obviously, but taking time, whether that's a trip away, whether that's a night away, whatever that may be, taking time for just you and your spouse so you can communicate and you can spend time together. What are some other reasons either you or people you know have used for why they don't communicate effectively? John.
There's a saying that says something to the effect of death is as light as a feather, duty as heavy as a mountain. And I found in my own marriage, it's really invigorating.
You're right. It's a daily responsibility. Have you ever had someone tell you, I don't really have anything that I need to correct. My spouse doesn't communicate effectively. Have we ever thought that and not said it, hopefully? Are there people that just don't care? Listen, I'm doing my thing. She can do her thing. I'm not worried about it. It is what it is. It is what it is. It's just too hard. Like Billy said, we're so far down the road of not communicating to try and turn around and go back. It's just not going to happen at this point. There's too much water under the bridge to sort this thing out at this point. John. Right. It doesn't happen overnight.
But for me, I'm finding that it's my pride that those little things, those aren't significant enough for me. I'm above that. That's like the internal dialogue.
No, and as we've discussed before and probably will discuss again, pride is at the root of a lot of problem with communication, because we don't like to say we were wrong. We don't like to say, I'm sorry, you were right. I had someone tell me, I just get mad. That's just who I am. They push my buttons. This is how I was made. I have a temper. And they've been married a long time. I can't do it. I've tried. Have you ever tried? Like Brett said, have you tried? Have you tried to communicate effectively and failed? And so you say, I can't do it. Mike. You're never going to fix the problems that you yourself have with communication until you admit what your weaknesses are. Until you come to grips with, yes, I have a problem with this. I have a problem with patience. I have a problem with my temper. I have a whatever they are. And as unpleasant as they may be, until you become self-aware or allow, you know them, you know what they are, whether you want to admit them or not. Remember, we looked at that survey. What did spouses say was, when was their relationship working the best? When they were working on who? When you're working on yourself. Pam.
Well, I was going to say something very similar to this gentleman back here, that I didn't have a sign on my wall, but I had a mantra when I was working at school, you know, dealing with administration and stuff. Never assume anything. You know, never assume that they expect this or expect that. Find out for sure. And then along with this, say, what is the plan? I mean, you have to make sure you are on the same page. But this is a problem in female-male relationships because females have more intuition, even with other females. Like, I have 3 boys and 1 daughter. And they could come home from school and I would have had a bad day and my boys would just, you know, brush by me and say, hey, you know, whatever. And she would come and she goes, what's the matter? You know, it was just something that she intuitively knew. And sometimes I make that mistake with my husband. I think, can't he see that I'm upset about something, you know? Or can't he realize that this bothers me? No. I have to tell him point blank, this bothers me, you know. And then he goes, oh, you know, and he doesn't get those clues.
No, you're absolutely right. I, you know, growing up, my mom and dad, my dad obviously is, I respect him greatly, very smart, very intelligent, but he doesn't read people like my mom can read people. And she may not have the education or the academia behind it, but she can read people. I remember we could get in the car after church and mom would say, I wonder what's going on with so-and-so. And me and dad are like, I don't know what you're talking about. What? They seem fine. No, they're not fine. And the same with me. I could come home from school, just like what you're saying, say hello to my dad, everything's fine, but my mom would be like, what's wrong? What happened? And that's right. There are differences between male and female. And I've tried at the point in my marriage now, I'm better sometimes. Sometimes I'm better because I have been married long enough, I can tell when something's bothering Jennifer. Sometimes I don't, but I'm better. And it's something I have to work on. And by the same token, she assumes, you know, she has to work on assuming that I know what she's thinking or how she feels. Sean.
So Jordan and I are swamped with the fear of God.
Yes, you are.
Just talk to me. But no, one of the things that we've had to specifically identify what that is, you know, as far as what hinders communication. And so we'd have to figure out together, like, you know, here she would say, here's what I need, I need you to stop doing, you know, that kind of thing. But also, you know, what I've been guilty of with just approachability that hinders it. Because I agree, it's not contradiction. You can't assume what a person's thinking, but sometimes our behavior has created a very clear pattern. And so there are issues or things that she knows, but what's the point of even talking to him about it? As John was saying, it's pride. And well, that's a communication killer, because if you don't work on yourself, your spouse has to know that whenever I go to this, not only that they're going to listen to me, but can a change happen for the two of us if need be? I mean, if you're not approachable, if you're real dogmatic and you got everything figured out, I mean, this is an extreme case. That's why women are in abusive relationships, by the way. You think communication is great? No. And it's been clearly communicated, you know, that the other person is not open to what they have to say. And then it happens on big scale and small scale.
Right.
Being just approachable.
No, that's true. So as we're getting ready to close here in the next 6 minutes, turn over to Romans chapter 12 and verse 15. I think this kind of adds on to what we're talking about. So it's been said that communication in marriage is like blood to the body. And I agree with that analogy. Communication is the lifeblood of your marriage. And if you take it away, if you take away communication, you don't have a marriage relationship. And so the question is, how often are you checking your communication? Like we've talked about, not waiting until the communication breaks down, but how often are you checking in on your communication? Do you talk to your spouse about how you communicate? Do you work on it? Is it a topic of discussion of some frequency in your relationship? Whether it's going, if it's good, even discussing it if it's good. Romans chapter 12 and verse 15. This should be our relationship, right, with our spouse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Can your spouse be joyful with you and you share in that joy? When things are good, are you happy for them? Whether they be something common between the two of you, or maybe it's something specific to their joy. Do you share in that? Do you feel it? And the same when they're sad. Are you compassionate? Are you engaged? And again, it may be between the two of you and it may not. But that's what the marriage relationship should be. 10 important minutes in communication. I used to go to work. Now I go to my office in my house. But when I would go to work, it's been said the most important 10 minutes of communication you're going to have with your spouse are the 5 minutes before you leave and the 5 minutes when you come back. And I've told you before, when there's an issue between Jennifer and I, it affects my day. So when you leave, and you leave in a huff, and the two of you have a disagreement, is that an effective communication? Do you pay attention to that 5 minutes before you leave? Do you make sure that you hug or kiss or say something to your spouse before one or the other is leaving for the day? And then when you come home, I think I shared with you, I came home from a trip. I had a lot of stuff going on. I had a call going on when I was I was on the phone most of the way when I came home in the car. I walked in, I start talking to Jennifer, and I'm just relaying all of this information and everything that's going on, and went into my office, and she came in and she was like, "Well, thanks for telling me my hair looks nice. You know, I got it done, and I got a new outfit. I appreciate it, you know." And then it just hits you over the head. You're like, I didn't pay attention when I came home. And I try to pay attention when I come home, at least that first 5 or 10 minutes. And I understand we're all busy and we have things to do. But are we paying attention to what's most important? Are we communicating effectively before we leave? And are we communicating effectively when we come home? So here's the challenge that I'm going to give you. Maybe it's not a challenge. What is something positive and encouraging you could say to your spouse today? What words can you use to lift his or her spirit? What are some words of praise that you can speak to your spouse today? Maybe you already do. Maybe that's something you practice on a daily basis. And if you do, fantastic. Good for you. But if you don't, try today to do this. Say something to your spouse to lift them up. Say something to your spouse that praises them, that's positive, that builds each other up. And don't wait for your spouse to do it first. Well, you got to say something to me, nice to me first. Again, maybe that's something you already do, but if it's not, I would suggest. And then at the end of this lesson, there is that checklist. We're not going to have time to go through it. It basically kind of sums up the things we've talked about in this lesson, and it has been quite a bit. So I would encourage you, if you haven't looked at this checklist, spend some time with your family, spend some time with your spouse, go over these things, try to be honest in your evaluation and see if there are areas that you can improve upon using, again, Jesus Christ is your foundation in how you communicate with each other and how you look at these questions and how you answer them with one another. Any final comments? I am communicating that we're done with communication. We're going to still talk about communication as we move forward. It took a little longer than I wanted, but I appreciate your patience. You guys have been excellent listeners. We'll move on to the husband-wife relationship next week.